He actually does have an iPhone, but he doesn't use it.
Bizarre.
He has two phones. One of them is not a work phone.
What?
He has two phones.
Weird or not? Weird or not? I haven't weird actually. Weird or not?
Had. Yeah. Hello and welcome to another episode of Finding Mr. Height, the podcast. I'm Allie, back with my co-host Rourke. Rourke, how are you doing today?
Allie, what a difference a week makes. I think that these updates are going to be very different in tone than last week.
Very, very I'm different so excited. In tone.
In my corner of the world, we both are having travel days. I leave for Dallas this afternoon. Gonna hunker down for Thanksgiving and my birthday and then make my way back. So I'm excited for that. That'll be nice. The big sort of like relationship-y news is that based on holidays and then work travel, I am not going to see the classmate for like almost 4 weeks.
That's so long.
I know. It like really sucks. It's interesting. We just to be like very clear with listeners, we are recording this after our recording session with Charisse, who yes. You're going to hear in 15 minutes, listeners. And one of the things she talked about really resonated with an experience that I went through this week, where obviously not only is there just sort of the general bummer sadness of not seeing the person you're dating for a month, there is also the fact that so we were sort of looking at ways to kind of try to move pieces around so we could be together on my birthday, but we just like came to the conclusion uh-huh. that there was like really no way to make it happen. And it's really okay. Like on the scale of caring about birthdays to not caring about birthdays, I lean towards not caring. And so okay. it's really not a huge deal. And we'll do something fun when we reconvene in December for sure. But I told him that would be like important to me to do a redo.
Yes.
And so while we were figuring that out, so what you'll hear her talk about is this sort of initial reaction and then reflecting later. And so when we had this conversation where he realized, you know, like this isn't going to work, we can't make this work, I had a very initial, very strong upset reaction where yeah. my gut was like, I don't feel like a priority. This like really hurts my feelings. And it like made me very sad. And so that was like kind of what bubbled up for me. And I just, you know, I was like a little quiet in the conversation and shared some of that, but not all of it, because I didn't think some of it was productive.
Yeah.
And then I had a couple days to think and before we had like a date night, and I had an experience with the student where I got a job pretty last minute. They just extended these offers really late in the cycle of mm-hmm. where after my first year of law school, I worked in DC.
Okay.
And this was – I had a sort of backup job in LA, and I needed to get out of that gracefully. And, you know, that was an awkward conversation where I essentially was like, I got this opportunity that I have to take. And so that was a professional decision that I had to make. But when I got the offer for this DC job, I immediately reached out to two professors that I really liked and said, you know, can we talk, like, are you on campus? Can I swing by and talk to you about what I should do here? Because I'm going to have to get out of this other commitment in a way that's honorable. And so I won't do it if you don't think it's worth it. And both the professors said, you need to do this. The student gave me such a hard time. He made me feel so guilty. He tried to tell me not to do it because he did not want me. Yeah. Because he didn't want to have like time
a long apart. Distance summer.
Like he didn't want to be like left in LA. Sorry, what?
How selfish is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Part of this work trip is that the classmate's going to Spain. And so that's like fun mm-hmm. and cool. And I'm like, fuck you. But I was really reflecting on that experience with the student. And then I was also thinking about the fact that there will come a time where I am in trial in some – and it's not going to be Spain. It's going to be like Reno. And I'm going to be locked in a courtroom for – I'm going to have to go just like write motions for a month and be on a trial team. And if I want to date somebody who didn't behave like the classmate, who cheers me on when that career opportunity comes my way –
didn't behave like the student.
Yes. Fuck. Their nicknames are too close. This
I know.
Is a problem.
They're too similar. I know.
Okay. If I want to date somebody who doesn't pull what the student pulled in when yeah. I get that career opportunity, who cheers me on, who says, that's amazing, go kick ass, whatever, then I cannot have it both ways. I have to be that person in return.
You have to be that person too.
Exactly. And I had that revelation as I was like in traffic driving to work. And ever since, I have been so at peace. Like, I'm obviously bummed and like, it's not my first choice to not see the classmate for a month, but like,
of course.
I
said, of course, like that, it's not ideal.
Yeah. But I like, I just feel like so fine. Like, I just feel really, like I said to my therapist, the word I would use is I just feel very steady. And yeah. I feel super secure in the relationship. Like, I know it's going to be fine. And I guess, you know, if it's not, it's not. But, like, it's not going to be better if I worry about it today. My therapist actually commented to me. She was like, you seem incredibly not anxious. Like, and I was like, yeah, exactly. This is what it is right now. And hopefully if the classmate and I stay together a long time, 4 weeks is a drop in the bucket. It just doesn't matter.
Very true.
So anyway, that's where I'm at.
It's kind of like we were talking about with Sean a little bit, where you can be disappointed in the outcome of something without being disappointed in the person.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You can be disappointed that you're not going to see the classmate for 4 weeks because that sucks. But mm-hmm. you don't need to be disappointed with him for leaving.
Correct. That's a great way to put it. And I think I probably less artfully conveyed that to him when he and I were at dinner. I said, I'm disappointed that, A, we're not going to be together on my birthday and we're going to be apart for so long. That's a bummer. That's not my first choice, you know?
Right.
Fact. And, yeah. And then I was like, and another thing can be true. I can sit on that feeling and also know that, like, this is the relationship that I want. This is the shape of a relationship that I want for my future for these reasons. And so I can't wait to hear about it. Can't wait for you to FaceTime me and share it with you and live vicariously through you. And like, that'll be great. And I'll send him stuff for my Thanksgiving and he'll send, you know, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, here we are.
I'm jealous. He's going to be in Spain. So I am also about to embark upon a long period of time without seeing the person that I'm dating. Granted, not a relationship, but I'm leaving today for California for like 3 weeks, essentially. It was supposed to be for It was supposed to be for like 5 or 6 weeks, but I have to come back for work, which is sort of annoying in the middle of a vacation. But silver lining, it means that I'm going to see the rower 3 weeks from now when I come back to New York for a weekend. But we went out on our third date last night and it was so fun.
How did you – okay, I want to hear the details of the date for sure because I don't know anything. But first, this might be jumping to the end. If you want to save it, let me know. I want to know how you navigated the conversation of the absence. And because this is something where when I've been not in a relationship, dating somebody and about to take a trip, I debate between requesting, could we FaceTime? Or something that makes me feel better is like locking in a date for when I'm back, like knowing that there's this back end event. And so like, I'm interested in what you did.
Yeah. So first I want to talk about how this date came to be in the first place.
Okay,
because on our last episode, which was really difficult for me to listen back to because it brought me back to like my anxiety that I was feeling at the time.
Yeah.
But on our last episode, I was talking about how although he knew in theory that I was going home for like a month, he did not know the specifics of when I was leaving and the fact that my mom was coming into town a few days before I was leaving. So we were like really running out of time to see each other.
Yeah.
We hadn't talked in a couple days. So I ended up texting him just like saying hi. We like went back and forth a little bit. And then when he asked how my week was going, I mentioned that I was sort of prepping to go home and that my mom was coming the next day. And then that kicked off. He ended up saying like, oh, that'll be so fun to have her staying with you. Sounds like it'll be challenging for me to see you before you leave though.
True.
And so then that got it. Yes, true. Yes, thank you. It will be. And so that got us into a whole conversation where we then kind of figured out that we could have a date after my mom and I went to a musical, which we did last night. To answer your question, I was debating how I wanted to approach my, you know, upcoming absence. And I ended up doing both of the things that you said. I ended up asking both for, well, they won't be FaceTimes because he doesn't have an iPhone. But
yeah.
He actually does have an iPhone, but he doesn't use it.
Bizarre.
He has two phones. They're, one of them is not a work phone.
What?
He has two phones.
Weird or not. Weird or not.
I haven't
weird
actually. Or not. Yeah, it, but he doesn't use the iPhone. He just
it's
has
a paperweight?
It. Like he doesn't – he uses – I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, definitively.
So, yeah, I haven't – I actually like didn't – haven't really asked him why he has this iPhone. Anyway, but I do know that he prefers his Google phone for some bananas yeah. reason.
We've actually had to kick a very close member of the group out of the group text. And we're just – and now we just tell his girlfriend to relay the information because we're like, we can't have it ruined by your yeah. one fucking Google phone, bro.
No, you can't have that person in a group yeah. chat. So anyway, so I – when we were out, we were having drinks and talking about, you know, my flight tomorrow at the time and, you know, whatever plans I have for when I'm home. So first I told him, I was like, yeah, like it's actually kind of annoying, you know, like I have to be back in the office, or it's not going to be in the office. It's like an offsite leadership thing during that time. And I didn't think I was going to have to come back, but I have to come back for this day. So I'm going to like stay through the weekend. And he said, yeah, that is annoying. Selfishly though, it means I'll get to see you sooner.
Great.
So we like kind of locked in. We don't have an actual plan.
That's
but
fine.
But we locked in that we will be, yeah, totally fine. But we will be seeing each other when I'm back for that weekend.
Perfect.
And then in addition to that, I asked him, do you think that we can have a video date or two while I'm gone?
And what was his reaction?
And he said yes. He said, yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
So, and then I actually told him that I was nervous to ask him that.
And how did he react to that?
He was like, I see why that might have been, you know, like a scary thing to ask. But like, he's like, and then he said, he's like, yeah, but like, I'm easygoing. Like, that's fine. And then I said, I was like, oh, well, that doesn't really make me feel better because easygoing people just could say yes to things they don't really want to do.
Yeah.
and then he's like, oh no, that's not what I meant. I am easygoing. However, I'm also very good at saying no to things I don't want to do.
Oh, love that. I mean, I think men are just better at that on average than women, I believe.
Yes. Yes. Like the people pleasing is not as much of a trait in men as it is in women, I think, yeah. largely.
The classmate notwithstanding in his multiple dinners, but anyway.
So yeah. So I think, so he like very much affirmed like, yes, video dates sounds like something I would like to do, not just something I'm acquiescing to do.
Great. Well, that's great. So then tell me about the date itself.
It was great. So it was a late date and I had told him it would be a nightcap.
I was in California. I was home from Friendsgiving getting ready for bed when you were like headed out to your date.
Well, because the musical was at 8 and musicals are
They're fucking long.
Like it was like we were leaving the musical at almost 11. And so I had originally told him 11-ish, even though I knew it would probably be a little bit later than that. But I said, like, I'll let you know when we're leaving. And he was like, yeah, no rush on my end. He had gone to dinner with a friend and was just like at home. And I had told him I would come to his neighborhood considering he was meeting up with me at almost midnight
yeah.
to go on this date. So he had picked this bar. It's called the Commodore in Williamsburg. I've only been there once and it was 7 or 8 years ago, but I remember it being a scene.
Oh,
like the place that you go in Williamsburg to like meet people, like crazy loud DJ.
Oof.
Like that's how I remembered it, and that is not his vibe.
Right, I was gonna say, you've even like, talked about how you don't like that scene.
Yes, yes. So he told me that we were going into the musical when he gave me the location of where we were gonna meet, and in my head I was like, oh, I don't think he's gonna like that bar. He's new to Williamsburg. He's only lived in Williamsburg for like a month.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe 2 months. So I highly suspected he had never been to this place. He probably like looked it up. They have really good fried chicken. Like when you like look them up, you would not think that this place is gonna turn into a DJ nightclub.
Got it.
It does not look like that kind of place. But I like was going to in the musical and I just kind of like lost that train of thought and started like got distracted by something else and just whatever. So then we're on the way, and my mom was in the Uber with me because then she was going to like drop me off a block away and then continue
this
on.
This is so cute in home. High school.
I got a text from him that said, I totally feel like an old person right now, but it's so fucking loud in there. I can't hear myself think. And he was like, I have a plan B. Like, meet me. How far out away are you? And we were like 8 minutes away. So he was like, okay, just meet me here still. But like, I have a plan B. We'll walk somewhere else.
Perfect. Yeah.
And when I got there, I was like, yeah, if I hadn't been going into the musical, I probably would have challenged the plan.
So I actually think this worked out perfectly because I am somebody who would receive that plan, know how exactly how it was going to spin out, and try to be like, let me save you from yourself and let me tell you like the situation and then see if you want to pivot. I think it's better sometimes if they just like learn it on their own and then like they make the decision, but like you were right all along. And so I think this worked out perfectly. Like, yeah, I love this.
Yeah. And there are like other situations where like somebody has suggested a restaurant that I know is good. We're going to need a reservation for, and they're suggesting that we walk to, like that we just walk in. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like in situations where we will be negatively impacted because we have not planned ahead properly, then I'll say something.
Yes. Yeah.
But like in this scenario, and there are a bajillion bars in Williamsburg. Like you don't like the one you're in. You just walked next door.
Right.
There's another one. So yeah. So my mom dropped me off. She like actually like saw him and like saw me say hello to him.
So cute.
But. Now, what? Lurking a bit. She said she was lurking a bit.
Love it. I support that. Good work, Trudy.
Rourke says good work. Good spying, Mom. It was a very nice hello. He kissed me hello.
Mm.
Which, like, I know we've talked about, like, when do you do the kiss hello? We did not do the kiss hello on our second date. We did, like, a cheat kiss hello.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, it's the natural escalation then.
Yes. But it just felt really, like, natural.
Love that.
Like I was meeting up with somebody that I've been dating, which I was, but like longer than, you know, this is our third date. Like I walked up to him, he kissed me hello. Then he like put his arm around me and we like walked off down the street.
Aw, that's so sweet.
It was really nice. So we ended up going to this other bar that had like live jazz and like nice cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
Much better vibe.
Much better.
So yeah, it was really nice and just caught up. I mean, I hadn't seen him in a couple weeks, so he got a new job offer. So we were talking about that. We talked about video dates when I'm home. It was just lovely.
Oh, that's so great. And I'm so glad. I know that it required some anxiety and like a little bit of figuring to get there, but I think it was worth it.
Yeah. And so like you said before, we are recording this after the segment with Sharice that the listeners are about to hear. So this will make sense once they hear that. But something that she was saying in our conversation reminded me of this. So you told the story about your friend, your guy friend, who was like expressing to a girl that he's dating that he likes her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was their third date, actually, yeah, if I remember correctly, in the story. And she like reacted kind of negatively to that. The listeners will hear the whole story in a moment. But one of the things that I really appreciated about last night and about our conversation is that like we did affirm that we like each other in an appropriate way.
Yes.
For somebody that we've met three times, but that like, yeah, like we're enjoying this. This is like, he said multiple times, like I really like spending time with you. You're so fun to be with.
Yeah. I love that.
And it was just like, it was very affirming to hear that. And then we know we had the conversations about the video dates. We had the conversations about like when we're going to hang out when I'm back. As a result of, I think, all of those things, I do not feel the anxiety that I felt the day after our second date.
That's great news.
Yeah. Because if the listeners remember, the day after our second date, I went to DC. So I actually was traveling also the day after our second date.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And then, yeah. And I was so anxious that whole day until I heard from him later that night for no reason.
Yeah.
I just was like, that was, you know, I just was very, my attachment was very triggered. And I don't feel that way at all today.
That's awesome.
Which is
We're just two peaceful
really
ladies
nice.
About to travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it was good. And I'm excited to go home for a few weeks, and then going to Mexico with my mom and my brother.
Delightful.
For like 4 days, and then I'm flying from Mexico back to New York for that work thing, and then back to San Diego for Christmas.
Amazing. Just a jet-setting gal.
Jet-setting gal. Yeah, and we're bringing the cats with us, so that's going to be an adventure today.
Yeah. I'm assuming they will stay in
– not to Mexico, yeah. Yeah.
I'm assuming they will stay yes. in San Diego when you come to New York briefly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So they'll my mom has 3 cats and my brother has 2 dogs. And so one of my brother's friends is going to be staying at our house with the 5 cats and 2 dogs.
Wow.
While we're in Mexico.
Oh, my God. It's like Dr. Doolittle. This is insane.
Yeah. So he's done it before. But so he'll stay there for Mexico. And then my mom and my brother will go home when I go to New York.
Right.
And we'll take care of my cats while I'm there.
Great. Well, very good.
And that's what's going on with me. And now I gotta pack.
Yeah. First, though, the listeners will hear the segment with Charisse. What? Tell the listeners about her a little bit.
Yes. Good job. Thank you. So Charisse Cook is a relationship therapist, and she actually does a lot of online therapy in terms of like courses and video trainings. It's very, very cool. We will tag her Instagram, and her website in the show notes. And she also plugs it as well in the section that we do, but she's awesome. She talks about couples therapy, but also, you know, individual therapy as you're kind of entering into relationships. And she has a lot of really great content on her website.
Amazing.
So I'm excited for everybody to hear our conversation with her.
Love it. And with that, to Charisse.
To Charisse. Bye. I don't know about you, Erica, but I have always been a PMS girly. Like that week before I get my period, even though I don't actually get a period anymore because of my IUD, the week when I would get it, I have always had just hormones all over the place, cravings, it's cramps, just all sorts of stuff. And it's been so much easier to manage my PMS with Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth.
So one thing I really like about this company is so many health studies they don't reveal has only been done on men. So I love a company that is actually making products not only designed for women, but is also testing them with women. Makes a huge, huge difference. Taking the Hormone Harmony isn't just for like menopause. I feel like we hear hormones and people think like, oh, that's not for me. But it can work for all of us at any age. Whether you do still have those night sweats, right? You don't have to have menopause to be hot at night, all right? That's your girl all the time. Racing thoughts and low moods, maybe poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, or the occasional bloating or gas. Hormone Harmony can help you with all of these things.
Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens, and the beauty of those is they help the body adapt to any stressors, like those chaotic hormonal change that we're talking about, or any of those issues that you mentioned. The biggest benefit is just feeling like myself all the time and not having these like ups and downs.
If you're interested in getting something like this into your routine, you should definitely check them out. And we have a limited time deal for you. You can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com and just use the code FMH at checkout.
Here with Charisse. Hi, Charisse. Welcome to Finding Mr. Hyde, the podcast.
Hi, lovely ladies. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
We're so happy to have you. This is so fun.
It's so exciting to be
speaking from another country.
I was just thinking, actually, I think this is our first international guest. Is that
100%?
Is that right? Oh, wait, no, Camilla.
Oh, well, that's true. No,
yes.
We were on her podcast.
We were on her podcast. So yes, Charisse, you are our first international guest.
I'm very happy to be the first. Thank you so much for having me. So hello from London.
Hi. Well, we're so pumped for this. We've been getting a lot of submissions and questions asking for more relationship advice. A lot of, you know, we do both dating and relationship advice, but a lot of our episodes more recently have been focused on the dating part. And mm-hmm. So, you know, with you being a relationship therapist, we're just so pumped. I think it goes really well with what people have been asking us for.
I'm also excited to integrate the advice into my own life.
Yes. So starting off, so I kind of gave you a little bit of a preview to this, but we do a segment on the pod called Weird or Nah, which is where we post a poll to our listeners and we ask them, we say like, you know, they do this thing. Basically, we say like somebody that you're dating does X thing. Is that weird or nah. Nah being like not weird, totally normal.
I love that.
And the way that we do it is that I post that poll to my Instagram story, and then Rourke does not look at the results, and she guesses live on the podcast what the results from the listeners are going to be. And when we have a guest, we have a guest guest too.
All right.
So this week we actually got – it's funny because we had already decided to post this poll before even getting this question when we asked people for their input about what they wanted to hear from you. But our weird or not this week is – they want to start couples counseling right after becoming official.
Do you want me to go first to put myself out there first? Okay. This, I actually don't know if this is going to be an unpopular opinion. It might be a very popular opinion, but I think that this is weird. When I saw this early on, I voted weird. And I think the reason for that is because at that point, like something I talk about with my therapist is the fact that like honeymoon phases exist because very rarely in early dating have you like opened up your worlds enough to have kind of like pressure put on them in a way that would create situations that you kind of have to navigate in a way where it's like, oh, you do that way. That's not gonna, you know, you don't learn that stuff until a little bit later. And so I don't know like what we would say necessarily unless I knew something going in that they really wanted to like have out on the table, have some sort of baseline. Like I've been through this thing and it makes this really hard for me. So I really want to work on that with you together. Is that something you're willing to do? Because that's what it takes to be boyfriend and girlfriend with me. So like that would be a kind of a different conversation. But I do, so I think under most kind of quote unquote, like normative dating experiences, I would say that this is weird. And I think that it's going to be 70 weird, 30 nah.
70-30. Okay. Charisse, what's your guess of what, and then we can get into like what we all think about it too. What do you think the listeners said? Weird or nah?
Okay. Yeah. Obviously I have my opinion, but let me guess at what the poll would be. So, I can't wait to find out what everyone voted. I'm going to go 60 weird, 40 nah.
So it is right in between you two. It is 66 weird and 34 nah. So you're both pretty close, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
And Charisse, the thing that we do after people vote is that they can then explain their answer. So there's like a little, question box where it says like, if you said weird, why do you think it's weird? Or if you said nah, why do you think it's not weird?
Right.
And so many people, Rourke, said similar things to what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I also think it's weird that quickly, like literally like, hey, let's be boyfriend, girlfriend today. By the way, let's go to a couples therapy session tomorrow.
Yeah.
But something that was super concerning to me was the number of people who thought that going to couples therapy means there's a problem. Like there were a lot of people that said like, this is weird because if you already have problems, then you shouldn't be starting to date. Like there were like some very like anti-therapy narratives really in the answers of a lot of people who said weird.
The reason I see a therapist one-on-one is because I have a problem. I repeat poor patterns in certain aspects of my life that I would like to understand and do better. And so I don't think it's obviously you're the one who read what they wrote. So like, I can't speak to that, but I don't have any problem admitting I have a problem. And like, I would not be shy about going to therapy if I had a problem, like communicating with my partner. Like, I think okay. That's not – I don't think that's necessarily anti-therapy.
No. Maybe I'm not explaining what they said properly then, because the narrative was not – the narrative was like, if you have things to talk about in therapy, that's bad.
Right.
So like
– that's not inherent – certainly not inherently bad. Like, I'm not bad because I have a therapist.
Exactly.
But I do have
exactly.
a problem.
Exactly. Exactly. So like, unsettled by the like anti-couples therapy rhetoric specifically. Like it felt like people thought that couples therapy was for like people on the brink of divorce.
Right.
And like that's it. But Charisse, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I was going to say, Charisse, like, when do you typically, like, what is your client base like? Like, do you typically see, like, what kind of stages of relationships do you see people in? Like, what are kind of common problems? Like, I'm just interested in your practice, too, kind of before we get to listener questions.
I see people at all stages of their relationship. But in recent years, I've definitely noticed that I'm attracting into my practice younger couples. And I literally mean by young as in the couple. It's sort of more earlier on in the relationship. But a lot of the time, sadly, and I think any therapist will tell you this, is when we start to see couples, it is too late. It is kind of, there is a time to seek therapy. And you're right. I think there is the stigma that is perhaps a truism, which is by the time a lot of people get into couples counseling, it's kind of past the point of no return. And that's really sad because actually what the therapy then becomes about is facilitating an ending rather than actually, you know, changing and bettering a partnership. So yeah, it is an interesting one, I think.
And so you feel like there's a lot of times when people come to see you where you're like, if you had only done this,
yeah,
X amount of time ago.
That's right. Because sometimes I just think the resentment becomes too entrenched. And then what's gone on and the hurt that has taken place has actually really damaged the relationship to a point where people can't find their way back to each other because it requires being really tender with each other and really kind and really compassionate. And I think after a certain point, we just don't want to do that. We're just stuck in kind of fight or flight. But something that I love, actually, and this goes back to the poll a little bit, is the time I really enjoy working with clients is when they are single and then they meet someone. And then I can support them through the process of trying to do a relationship differently or with esteem or the way they want to. And having that touch point every week to be checking out, how am I doing? What am I doing? Oh my God. And I can say, I remember this from last time, is this about now or is that about that other person that you were dating? And it can be a really exciting, and I love that because that's the moment where change is really at its freshest and most able to happen, I think. So, although I can understand people thinking this is so weird, you know, how could we go to a sort of therapy or whatever? There's like a part of me that's like, well, actually, that is the best time to, go in and just keep what's going good in an exciting stage of your relationship when we are all putting our best foot forward and we all are being the best versions of ourselves. Let's keep doing that, actually, and keep us on a really strong road. So I know that doesn't really happen, but part of me would be quite intrigued to experiment with that almost.
Yeah. I wonder, like, what would that conversation look like? Like, if, if I'm somebody who wants to start that with somebody that I'm more newly dating, I probably wouldn't do it like the day we became official, but like in a newer relationship, like how do you pitch that?
I think that actually a great way to do it is to maybe not even use the word therapy, because I think that does come loaded with what we were saying, which is all the stuff about, oh, there's a problem, we need to go to therapy. And my sort of view of therapy is, and as you know, this isn't a new or an original analogy, but it is like going to the gym. It's sort of if you want to be fit, if you want to, tone up, whatever, go to the gym. You don't go to the gym because, your legs are broken and you need to figure out how to use them again. You go to gym to be healthy. So you go to therapy, and you certainly go to relationship therapy to be healthy, because otherwise we can all be pretty unhealthy left to our own devices. So I would suggest, something in the conversation being, hey, I see this person and they really help coach me and teach me stuff about relationships, which I find really interesting. And I think it'd actually be really beneficial for us to go and just see where we are at and just make sure that we're not going to fall into any traps or make any mistakes, and just sort of be really light about it and sort of sell it in a way for me, I believe what it is, which is, this is what I do to be healthy, and this really helps me. And it can be part of our relationship if you're into that.
Yeah, that actually brings up a question that I also had. Literally just picking your brain for my own personal use at this point. But that brings up a question that I also had, which is, So you mentioned like you have a client, let's say, who's single, and then they get into a relationship, etc. Would you want to see that couple, or would you recommend that they go to somebody totally different who like doesn't have the more of a background with one person versus the other?
That is a tricky one, and that does come up a lot, or it'll come up if I'm working with an individual and then suddenly they may want their partner to come in and get some support as well. It is difficult because all therapists do work differently. And so if I'm working a certain way with someone, it would be great to get their partner or person that they're dating on board with, you know, the same, you know, goals and ways of doing things, I guess. So part of me would like to do that, but I think sort of ethically and for a lot of people, they like to have their own individual therapist separate. So I do have, a whole handful of people that I know work, that I really rate and think work brilliantly, that I will then refer to. And then it almost becomes like a little bit of a sort of support team for everyone, which is quite cool.
I like that. Yeah, I like the idea of like the referral. Sorry, go ahead, Rick.
I spoke and what it was so, my voice was so strange. Anyway, so my boyfriend and I each have individual therapists, and I think I would react very positive. A girlfriend of mine has had her now husband come into therapy with her for one session where she was like, there's this thing that's very important to me that I've now been kind of trying to articulate to you and something isn't working. Could you come for like one session or like half of a session and we kind of try to break through this together? And like he's done that with her as like a one-off. I would be super down for that. I would react very negatively if my boyfriend was like, come to my therapist as couples therapy. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, no, we are finding new neutral territory that like, absolutely not. Like I don't know. It's the same reason why I personally don't want to ever like move into somebody's place. I want to get a new place together mm-hmm. because I never want to feel like one person like has like rights to the space that like you don't mm-hmm. have. Like I want it to be like truly shared and kind of on equal footing. And so I would absolutely want to like reset.
Yeah, I think that's how most people feel, and I totally understand it. And that certainly would be, you know, the ethical recommendation of what we do. But yeah, everyone is different. Sometimes the trust is so great that you do want someone to come in and get the input. But I totally understand what you're saying, and that's what we have to sort of make sure that we're comfortable with, and then it can be something positive.
Yeah, I could see. I like the idea, Rourke, that you said about like her husband coming in for a certain session to talk mm-hmm. about, like, I could see that if I was like working through something with my therapist and was like, oh, you know what? Like, this would actually be really helpful if all three of us were in this conversation because I'm not doing a great job of translating.
Yeah.
But on an ongoing basis, I actually had a friend breakup years ago now where she wanted me to come to her therapist with her on like an ongoing basis. And I had that same visceral reaction as you were saying, Rourke, with like, absolutely not. I will not be going into this situation where you've probably been shitting on me to this person for years. So yeah, I get what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we break out some of the listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Or did so you one have of them was personal ones.
No. I do have more personal ones, but I can pepper Christmas. Those in. We don't have to. Yeah, right. We don't have to turn this into my personal therapy session. But one of the questions that we actually got a few times was, when is a good time to start couples therapy? So I think that will be super helpful for people.
Yeah.
So something else that we got a couple different times, and this is something that I've been talking about actually recently on my platform as well, is setting boundaries in early dating. Mm-hmm. And this particular question was setting boundaries of intimacy. But I think just more broadly, that can be really tricky in early dating when you're kind of still trying to feel somebody out. And, you know, what sort of recommendations or advice do you have on that?
I think that it's really important to have an understanding of what boundaries matter to you once you start dating. And that is probably the most important thing, because I think what can easily happen is we kind of drift and we're going to wait and see what happens and we aren't really quite sure and we're just feeling other people out. And actually we can drift away from ourselves very easily. And I really like working with my clients about at what point did we begin losing ourselves? You know, when did that just start happening and become something sort of normalized? So I think really taking stock, you know, whenever a relationship ends or a dating thing doesn't work out, there's just a little bit of a taking stock period of what happened, what can I learn, and what do I learn about myself and how I protect myself and look after myself in a relationship? Because that's what boundaries are. They're there to really help us feel safe so we can be fun and flirty and enjoy ourselves and be relaxed, actually. And I think that that's such an important distinction, because a lot of clients that I work with are quite stern and strict and sometimes abrasive with their boundary setting. And that I feel is actually a bit self-sabotaging, because, you know, at the beginning of a relationship is a time of opening. How do we open ourselves up to someone new? It's not a time of closing and putting up a wall and then, what, you know, expecting someone to work really hard to sort of pull that wall down, if you know what I mean. So I think there's a real balance between really knowing your boundaries and then how to implement them in a way that is still relational. How can we do it and express it in a way that doesn't feel like we're actually pushing someone away, that we're actually almost letting someone in more? So I think focusing on doing it gently, I think a lot of boundaries are just done internally. We know what we want, and our behavior reflects that. So if we don't want to see people at a certain time, then we don't. Or if we only want to see people for a length of time, we decide to do that. And then we put that boundary in place ourselves. For other things, like when I send you a message and I don't hear from you for 3 days, you can just say a boundary of, when I'm talking to someone, I'd like us to speak at least, or just touch base at least every 48 hours, or every day, just once, or, you know, to just be putting it out there in a really gentle way, because it's an interesting thing to see what then comes back in terms of how someone responds. I actually had someone recently who wanted to go on a date for dinner, and the guy said, okay, great, why don't we come to this place? And it was literally down the road from where he lived, which would have required her to travel for about an hour to get him. And she said, hey, okay, that's a nice idea. I'd actually prefer, why don't we meet halfway? She responded. And he just deleted the talk. It was just gone. It was that
what?
Was boom. Yeah. So that was
lazy is he?
So that was literally, he was not prepared to meet halfway. I mean, it could not have been more obvious. So that, you know, I guess that's a gift, you know, that was really, really clear. But that was it. And it was really great that she did that, because she could have wasted a couple of months on this person. And, you know, but she could easily have gone, oh, it's fine, I'll just go, it's no problem. But she said, no, hey, how about just meeting halfway? Boom, that was the end of that. So it doesn't always work in our favor, but I think it can be helpful.
What you were saying about how to express boundaries in a relational way really resonated, and how they can be self-sabotaging sometimes. Mm-hmm. A guy friend of mine has just had a third date with a girl that he likes. And on the date, he said in sort of a play, they were making pies for her Friendsgiving. And he made a playful remark about liking her. And like, you know, he was trying not to make it sort of too intense, like, I like you, but like, you know, trying to mention that, you know, I like you. And so he did that, and she got very stern and goes, you don't like me, I don't like you, you don't know me yet, and I don't know you yet.
Whoa.
And he said, he was like, I kind of couldn't really emotionally recover for the rest of the date after that. Like, and she then, I think, tried to explain that she feels like she presents very well, and then things can – and then once people start uncovering more about her, they don't like her as much. Or when she kind of shows more of herself, it's like, oh, I'm not the person I was on the first three dates. And so that's such a great example of, I wonder if – because I said my first reaction was, I wonder if she's been love bombed before.
I was actually thinking, like, it feels like maybe that is a – I don't want to say trauma response, but like – because – but trauma, there's a range of trauma. But of somebody who has had that happen before, where somebody was like overly effusive and love bombing, which it doesn't sound like your friend was doing in any way.
No. And so So yeah, so I think that there was a way that she could have responded or shared that in a way that didn't make him feel like kind of dumb for saying, I like, you know, saying a very normal, nice thing for where they were at that stage of dating.
Absolutely. And that speaks of, I think, the reactivity of what we say and what we do. And that's, I guess, what I mean about being relational. Being relational actually doesn't, it sort of isn't the same as being individual, which in our world today, we're becoming more and more individualistic. And there are lots of great things about that. But in terms of our relationships, there's some not so great things about that. And so something I work on all the time is we really need to be emotionally regulating all the time in our interactions so we can notice when maybe someone says something like this lovely guy being really quite lovely by the sounds of it. And we notice there's a part of me that wants to come out and go, hey, we don't even know each other yet. What are you saying? That you have that moment of pause to notice. I actually want to come out right here and set him straight, because I think we can be a bit derailed because there's such a narrative now of you stand up for yourself and you state your needs and you put down your boundaries. And that's, you know, how does someone really feel warm and, you know, close to us when we're like, you know, these ninjas putting all this stuff out there? And so there is definitely something and exactly like you're saying, Ellie, about the sort of the trauma response or whatever it's, we will look after ourselves perhaps in too extreme a way if we are not thinking and noticing our reactions. And I'm a big fan of doing things like retrospectively. So in the moment, notice, oh, I feel really a bit alarmed by what he just said. It's okay. Just carry on with the date or whatever. And then maybe in the next date, say, hey, you remember when you said that thing? And, oh, you know, I was actually really touched or whatever. But you know what? There was another part of me that thought I was a little bit nervous because we're only just getting to know each other. And we're able to then bring a calmer part of ourselves. You know, we've kind of processed what's gone on. We aren't in that reactivity. And for me, that's the key. You know, couples work is so much about try not to react. Roll with it, go with it, breathe through it. And then when you're really calm and grounded and you can use another part of your brain that's part of problem solving and has empathy and everything, you can come in and have a relational conversation, which is let's actually have an intimate discussion, which might actually bring us closer together versus me putting down a harsh boundary and actually maybe creating distance in the relationship. And that's the last thing I want to do.
Yeah. I recently went on like 5 dates with this guy. I'm not seeing him anymore, but I did this like boundary setting series about how he reacted so well to boundaries that I set and sort of how I said them. And one of them really reminds me of what you're saying, because we were at, I think it was our 3rd date, might've been our 4th date. I can't remember now, but we were at a bar and we were sitting like kind of next to each other at a table and we had been holding hands and he started like rubbing the inside of my thigh. I was wearing a dress. So he was like rubbing the inside of my thigh. Mm-hmm. It made me really uncomfortable. And my initial reaction was fight or flight. Like my initial reaction was to be like, don't touch me. And I, you know, it's that balance, because I took a beat and then kind of said like, hey, like that, you know, that much PDA is making me a little uncomfortable right now, but like, let's keep holding hands. Like, you know, I want to touch you. I just don't want that much touching. But it's such a balance, because that's not the kind of thing that I can just like let go and wait until later, because I needed the touching to stop.
Mm. That's a great example. And it sounds like you handled it really well. But you still had that beat to not be like, hey, you know, and push him away or kind of react as if, you know, something, you know, really scary was happening, which is probably what was happening in your body. But you were able to then just say, actually, do you know what? That isn't right for me now. Absolutely. I'm not saying to sort of wait on stuff like that. I think you handled that really, really well. But you were able to notice it. And I love that. And that's great. And it was obviously okay after that. He was able to hear you and respect that. And then you just carried on with your
evening.
Completely. Yeah.
Yeah. He actually thanked me. The whole reason I made a video about it is because he thanked me for being comfortable enough to tell him that it made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
which I really appreciated. Yeah. We didn't end up working out for other reasons, but like that was a really great quality he had.
Men actually respond so well to as much guidance as we can give them, because I work with a lot of men and men are just like, why can't you not just tell me? And I will always coach my clients and just say, how could you have expressed that more directly? How could you have just in a relaxed way just said, hey, boom, boom, boom. It's kind of, as women, we can, I think, be a little bit barbed in how we speak sometimes. And there is a defensiveness, you know, because it's so vulnerable in our relationships. There's so much fear there. And then, yeah, we don't have a lot of options with how we communicate. So, yeah, I think by guiding people, and this works especially well with men, just stating what you want, making requests, you know, really appreciating it when something happens and say, oh God, I love it when that happens, or I loved it when you did that, or it made me feel really special when you did that. And that really helps us teach each other what we actually need from each other rather than just expecting everyone to just know. So that I agree with you. That's an amazing practice.
There's a relationship therapist that I follow, and I saw a video or an Instagram story of hers the other day that I've been trying to implement, which is to like praise near misses. Yeah. So like when they kind of like try to do something that you've said is important to you or that you really like, and for it might go wrong, but they're clearly putting the foot in the right direction, to be like very grateful that they are like starting the process and like it's clearly they're thinking about it. And so yeah, I've been trying to do a lot of that.
And that is so wonderful, because that goes against, I think, the very critical world that we live in today. And when I'm sitting with a couple who are struggling, they've come to therapy, let me tell you, it is so clear how critical they are of each other. And as we're progressing in therapy, it is so important to really begin to relax into, we're all learning here, we're all trying, we're not going to get it perfect, and we have to hold on to, I love that, the near misses, or just the attempts, or just the good intentions, and to allow that to actually be received by us as something, because it's very easy, I know I'm guilty of this, to just be dismissive of anything. And actually a near miss or an attempt is just even more proof of someone's uselessness, or, you know, patheticness or impossibility to meet our needs.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, oh my gosh, we're just, you know, we are not going to get any traction. We're not going to create any goodwill, and we're not going to inspire more change and more effort from that perspective. So I love that idea as well. That's so important.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's actually something that I have talked to my therapist about, and that I dealt with in my last relationship, which was a disaster for other reasons. But he often gave me the feedback that like he felt like once he had achieved one thing, I had another thing I needed him to achieve. Mm-hmm. Like that I would give, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head now, but like he was right in this one particular thing. He was right that like I had a need, and he would like figure out how to fill it, and then I would have another need. Yeah. Like it was like he felt like the goalposts were always moving.
Mm. That's right. That's absolutely right. I've heard so many men say that. I mean, I've heard that 1,000 times. There's that, you know, you hear the same phrases, whatever I do, it's never enough. She's never satisfied. Even when I try, it's not right. So, you know, everything, you know, Rourke, like you were saying, and everything you're saying, Ali, is so true. And we can sort of move into this sort of headmistress, school teacher, policeman role in a relationship. And, you know, it's not sexy and it's not nice. And that, you know, so to bring in something that is more tender and more just appreciative, that you're able to actually see and validate someone's efforts, and maybe efforts that are not even what we want. We don't want the way they express their love or they show their love, but we can appreciate this is how they do it and be grateful for that. These are, I think, are very difficult things, but they go against our trauma, and we don't realize that that's actually going to heal our trauma of, by relaxing into accepting what love looks like and how it's expressed in so many different ways, and we can receive it in different ways actually teaches us to be broader and for our hearts to expand really and have more that we can take in as love, when actually what we really want, what our trauma wants, is a specific kind of love, exactly how we want it, when we want it, the way we want it. And anything deviating from that is just trash. And it's such a shame because we then become very, very difficult to please. And that feeds into, I think, a lot of fears men have. And then we're stuck in a really unhelpful cycle.
Yeah. What you're saying reminds me of a question that we got from one of our listeners, which the question is how to tell your partner that you long for more care, interest, and love in the relationship. And when I read that, my first thought was, I wonder if this person's partner is giving them what they think is care, interest, and love, but it's just not being received that way. I mean, I have to hope that they're not in a relationship with somebody who's giving them no care, interest, or love, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like they're just maybe doing it differently.
Yeah. I think, you know, I always take it for granted that, you know, people who ask questions, they're in the relationships they want to be in, you know, they're choosing that person, they're fundamentally decent people. That's why they're in relationship with them. And so figuring out these things that you know, do have meaning in a relationship is important. And it is painful because often we can have a real yearning for, you know, verbal affection and affirmation and words. There are definitely words people. And then there are often, I think, acts of service people. And that's, you know, it's such a shame because those two things do not really complement each other very well. But I think definitely learning to make requests without expectation is something that I would really recommend, you know, ask for what you like and don't expect to get it. Because I think sometimes we're really brave and we might say, hey, I'd love it if we could just, you know, I'd love it, you know, if you know, if your birthday's coming up or something, you can say, oh, I'd actually really love you to just write a few words of how you feel about me. I would just love that more than anything or something. It's kind of a way of asking for what you need and teaching. And sometimes that can work really well. And people go, oh, great. I didn't even know that about you, that that's what you needed. And I'd love to meet those needs and let's do that. But I think what happens a lot is actually people are then terrified because they don't actually know how to do that, because that is not how they communicate love, or it's just so difficult for them. And often it's the people who are really affectionate and, you know, super tactile or great with words who want that back. And funnily enough, the person that you're with probably is not going to be as great a wordsmith as you are, or, you know, nearly as affectionate as you. So what's going to be really effortful for them and a real sort of sign of sort of love for you is going to probably register like 10 or 20% on your own personal sort of scale. So I think it is a way of easing each other. So exactly what you're saying, Ali, it's how can we see how the love is being expressed and really be grateful for that and take that in. And as we go along, make requests for what we would like in the hope that, you know, we will get that. But what I will say about that is we have to accept repetition. We need to ask 100 times. You know, it's not just once or twice and, oh, well, what's the point? And I just, you know, they don't do it anyway. So blah, blah, blah. It's like, keep asking, like broken record technique. I'd love it if we could spend more time together. I've planned this thing. Let's go and do this thing. I've booked us tickets. It's in your diary. Let's do this. Or, you know, really repeat what you want, because I do believe that relationships are about teaching each other how to love each other. And that is also a great thing. It's like having a bit of a conversation and saying, hey, I'd love to spend more time together, or I'd love, you know, you to be praising me or complimenting me or saying nice things more. You know, you need to get better at that. What can I get better for you? You know, what can I do for you? Because I'd love to. Or, and sometimes we even know. I'll challenge my clients to go, okay, well, what would your partner want more of with you? And they look a bit sheepish and go, oh, right. Well, they'd like me to be doing this or doing that. I'm like, okay, well, how about you start doing something?
They know.
That?
Yeah.
And you know what? Suddenly you can be like, hey, I'm doing all this great stuff for you. Where's, you know, where's my love letter or whatever? And, you know, then suddenly you're in a place where, you know, there's mutuality going on. And again, it's much more relational and equal.
I have another listener question, but it's definitely something that I relate to. which is, I get anxious that my boyfriend is not my person when things don't feel amazing. How do I get past that?
Yeah, that is such a great question, isn't it? Because I think when we're dating and when we're in relationship, there's a part of us that comes to the fore that is, you know, does have so much need, and our expectations for the feelings that we're going to have are so great. And what's difficult is that we do sometimes feel them, don't we? Sometimes it's like, wow, you're just amazing, this person. I'm just so lucky and this is great. And then like 2 weeks later, it's like, what? You again? Oh God, why are you being so annoying? Or it's really, it is not consistent. And that is something that I think is very difficult to handle with this whole notion of, am I falling out of love with this person, or is this person not the right one for me? And so I like to take a bit more of a global picture of this and do that whole thing, which is, you know, love is a well thought out decision that we make. It isn't a feeling by which we are overwhelmed. It is really something that we choose to do. And the more we choose to do it, the more we are likely to feel that loving feeling or that sense of connection. But connection is something that is dependent on a lot of things, and it is ever changing. And that's what makes it quite special. Do not expect your relationship to feel amazing all of the time, but put effort into making it amazing. And notice when someone is perhaps behaving in ways that show you that they are loving you, and really just crank your heart open and let that in. Because I think it's a very, you know, it's like a little bit, you know, therapists don't really believe in boredom. And so from a relational perspective, we can't really believe in this sort of thing of feelings changing. It's either we're opening or we're closing. So if we aren't feeling something with our partner, what we can say to ourselves, what am I close to right now? That there's some expectation that we're probably wanting that's being disappointed. Well, you know, welcome to relationship life. But there's something happening for us, and there's a close in us. You know, we're not open to the receptivity and having it all of it. Something is a little bit closed. And so I think it's our job to be working on being open in our relationship all the time. Yes, it's not going to be sunshine and strawberries every day. Of course not. But there is something about, we are opening and closing all the time, and we can understand ourselves better about understanding what, how and when that happens and become more conscious of that.
Yeah. Something that I try to do and that my therapist has introduced me to is to consider that thing. So in the question where it says when things don't feel amazing, if there's something like a pattern that this person does, or there's this aspect about them, and that's sort of what's not making it feel amazing, I often try to say to myself, like, okay, it's a little like this person doesn't do X super well. That's a need I have to kind of, you know, that's a muscle that we have to exercise as a couple, where we work on that. And like, okay, so this person doesn't do X super well. I could break up with this person and go find somebody who does X amazingly. Mm. However, in theory, the person you're with hopefully does Y amazing. And there is no telling whether or not the person who does X amazing is also going to be able to do Y amazing. Right. And you can take that gamble, go for it. And so I think what then becomes the question that I ask myself is, am I starting to lose myself in the Y being, or sorry, in the X being like not so good? Like, is that causing me to not be myself, trying to deal with a deficiency in X? And if no, then like look at Y and say, like, these are all these like really amazing things. This is where we're so aligned. Like, I want to be with this person for all these amazing reasons. And like, this stuff can be worked on.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, because it can easily become a sort of, you know, relationship perfectionism of sorts, that it's like, well, what about this, this, and this, and this? And oh, well, this, he's brilliant at that, or she's great at that, but not so hot on this. And we can then become a little bit too, I guess, hypercritical or overly expectant or really actually quite perfectionist, as opposed to I'm actually with this human being who has a lot of these great qualities and also these other bits of things that obviously I have as well. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of, you know, how can I even love this person for this seeming deficit or, you know, this limitation? It's a very powerful thing, you know, for those of us who have like nieces and nephews or our own kids or even pets or whatever, there's this real just love that just exists that can just happen. And it just fills our hearts. And, you know, it doesn't matter what they do or how they behave or, you know, how messy they are or whatever, we just love and adore them. And it's kind of what part of us is that tapping into whereby we are just so accepting and loving at the same time, and then we just get that right back from them. I like to challenge us to bring that into our relationships more, because that is like that multiplies the love and good feelings in a relationship, whereas the sort of the over focus sometimes on what's lacking or what isn't there can slowly suck the joy and the sort of happiness from that relationship. And that's my worry, is sort of we're all going to inevitably have stuff. We are human. Yes, keep working, keep growing, keep challenging each other. But also, I think there's also something about accepting each other brings incredible love and deepness to our long-term relationships.
Yeah, I love that. I saw something recently that reminds me of about pets, where like I have two cats. You've probably seen them walking behind me. And like they do like really annoying, incredibly dumb things on a daily basis that just seem to be completely intended to sabotage me in my life, and yet I'm obsessed with them. Like I don't focus on the fact that they like purposefully knocked that glass off the counter. Like I'm obsessed with them.
Absolutely.
So like, you know, it's obviously like a little bit different, but like I focus on, you know, oh my gosh, we had the most amazing little cuddle session this morning. It's totally fine that my couch is ruined.
Yeah.
You know?
This is not a listener question, but this conversation does get me thinking. None of this is to say there aren't deal breakers or breaking points and things that are unhealthy. And so where do you find this is not going to be a hard and fast question, but you know, where do you see that line coming up? What to you are indications of this couple has, or, you know, one person has kind of done the work to realize they've been focusing on the positive, but the negative is actually unhealthy for this other person. Like where do we tip into that area?
That's a great question, because it is really difficult, because for those of us who believe in marriage, when you're married to someone and something happens 3 years in, 5 years in, 10, 20 years in, you're in it and you're going to be dealing with it. And we don't sort of ask ourselves these questions, because that's the commitment we make when we marry someone. So it is an interesting thing. And working with many couples has taught me, I guess, what really matters. And I think for me, you know, non-negotiables are really quite extreme. You know, they are the abusive relationships. They are the sort of, you know, people with active addiction issues that they have no interest in addressing whatsoever, maybe huge financial issues or debting issues that, again, not interested in looking at, head in the sand, just pretending it isn't kind of happening. Those are really more my non-negotiables, because, you know, relationships are fundamentally difficult and humans are also fundamentally quite complicated. And so there is going to be a lot of difficulty, and there are going to be places where we miss each other and we have a tough time. So I think something that's definitely helpful is maybe to have two people who are pretty much into and committed to one another in the same way. I think often a big problem in relationships that is often insurmountable is there's one person really willing to do all the work, and then they're sort of over functioning and they're doing everything and it's all on their shoulders. And the other person is kind of very uninterested, very half-hearted in their efforts. and actually the sort of commitment level is sort of a bit ambivalent, that I think could, for me, would be a non-negotiable, because I think that can be incredibly damaging to the overfunctioner and the person that really does care. That, you know, there's a lot of
that feeling. That was me, and there's an ex that we call PowerPoint on the show. Okay. That was me in PowerPoint to a T, where that's exactly what our relationship was. And then finally, when I had the courage to break up with him, he was like, let's go to couples therapy. Let's do all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, no, you can't now choose to fight. Like, I'm now done. And yeah, well done. It was not good.
Yeah, that happens so much. It's really, really, really sad. People mature and grow up at different levels in a relationship. And sometimes people just unfortunately miss the opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a little bit of a somber note.
I know. It's a little bit of a somber note, but I feel like that like we kind of did like an end-to-end sort of conversation. I feel like, although it is a somber note, it feels like a nice place to wrap up.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was, I'm very excited to, I mean, obviously once it's published, I can listen to it as many times as I want, but I'm excited to edit this to re-listen because I want to get new takeaways.
All the nuggets.
Yeah, it was really good. It was, I think we actually covered a lot of stuff that hopefully will be very useful, because there is, you know, there's so much of our human experience in all of this, I think, and we need to be reminded and told. And yeah, hopefully, well, I hope you guys found it helpful and interesting.
Absolutely. Yes. So Charisse, before we wrap up, let the listeners know where they can find you.
Okay. Well, I'm on Instagram and you can find me at the Charisse Cook, and you can spell my name CharisseCooke. And I also have a website, charissecook.com, where I keep all my videos and all my articles, where I literally walk people through a whole sort of journey through of relationship therapy that's completely for free. And people can read up and kind of, in a very bossy way, take people through the process of how to learn about relationships and what we do in them and all the traps we fall into and how to really avoid those at all costs if we can.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. This was incredible.
Yeah, thank you for your time. What time is it there?
It is now 5:30 in the evening.
Okay.
Okay, well, yeah, enjoy your night then.
Thank you so much, guys. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Us too. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye, have a good night.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.